Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to changing the world of work so that more organizations can be more effective and less dysfunctional, and employees can be more fulfilled and less miserable. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Cody Thompson. How you doing, Cody?
Doing great, Pat. Excited to be back.
Just the two of us here today, although we've got Matt and Liam engineering for us.
That's right.
And this is the day after Labor Day that we're recording this. So we're going to do a special Labor Day edition. I'm not sure what Labor Day actually is. I mean, I know it's a day off of work, so we don't have to do labor.
To celebrate labor or something.
Right. So we're going to talk about the world's... Well, tell us. You're supposed to tell me.
The worst job in the world.
Yes. We're going to talk about bad jobs.
That's right.
But there's a purpose to this. You know, we're going to talk about... Work is so important, and we're going to talk about bad jobs. We're going to have some fun with that. But then we're going to also talk about, if we had to design the world's worst job, what would it be? And we're going to give people some advice about how to avoid getting a bad job, or how to make the jobs of the people that work for you better.
And I think it's going to be interesting, because I think designing the world's worst job is going to be surprising to people. The elements that are in there and what we've talked about. And in part, I'm excited to do this one on today, because even as we headed back in, you know, 3-day weekends are wonderful. I love 3-day weekends because I get to spend more time with the family and stuff.
Right.
But oftentimes, I think there's so many people that after a 3-day weekend, it's even that much harder to come back into work.
Yeah.
And as I was driving in this morning and we had our staff meeting, that's not true here. And I love talking about this concept, because I think we have a wrong idea about what work should be and how it could be better.
Right. Friday night should be great, because you're getting to go home and be with your family. Sunday night should be great. And in this case, Monday night, because you get to go and see your friends at work and do fun things. And there's people who get the Sunday night blues.
I know.
And that sucks.
It's miserable.
That's right. By the way, Tracy's not here, so we should have probably called it the job, the suckiest job in the world, or something like that.
We sneaked one through earlier this month, I think.
That's right. So let's talk about this work thing. Work is really important. I mean, my son asked me the other day, Dad, if these things in life like family and faith are so important, why do we spend so much time working? Hmm. And it's a great question. But throughout history and throughout the Bible, people talk about how important work is. You know, work is supposed to be a dignified experience, and it makes us better people.
Right. And it's part of the natural fabric of how we're supposed to interact with the world. Like, even just toiling with the earth, or the idea of not working would make you happier. That's not true. I mean, in fact, we are dignified in our work. And actually, you bringing your talents and skills to the table is something that we all should be doing and have to do, and actually is satisfying, more satisfying than sitting at home.
Yeah, we are meant to do this and to contribute to others and the greater good. You know, it's funny, because I've talked to my kids about that too. And we've talked about, like, wouldn't it be great if you made all this money and never had to work? And then we talk about it, and it's like, it's miserable.
Right.
And there are people in the world that are like that, either because their family has a lot of money, or maybe they were an athlete and they made a bunch and then they didn't do anything afterward. Nobody is enjoying that. And there's this great movie called About a Boy with Hugh Grant, where his dad left him a bunch of money because he wrote like a Christmas Carol song that made a bunch of money. So he's a trust fund baby, and he's just miserable. He sits around and watches TV, and he goes out to eat. And we think that that would be fun, and it wouldn't be.
Well, and we've said this actually, and it sounds surprising and counterintuitive. It even sounds fake at some points, but to say that if I won the lottery next week or tomorrow, I'd go on an extravagant vacation and stuff, but I would not retire. You know, I like working. It brings me fulfillment and joy to participate in something that I actually feel that I'm good at and that has an impact on other people. It's not just about financial, you know, independence.
Right. And yet so many people kind of assume that that's the way it is. And that leads us to accepting things about work. And, you know, my dad, God rest his soul, and he was the reason I got into this field, but he used to say, hey, if it were fun, they wouldn't call it work.
Right.
And that doesn't mean it's supposed to be always fun. I mean, if you're a farmer, you're doing a lot of tough stuff, but you should get a sense of satisfaction and joy out of it. You should be excited to do parts of your job. And that's what we're here to talk about. So what we're going to do is we're going to indulge the other side and talk about the worst jobs we've ever had.
Right.
And before we do that, we're going to ask people in the audience, we want you to send us the worst job you've ever had. Right. And just like gritty, nasty. And the top three are going to get a prize from us.
I think you're going to sign your book, The Truth About Employee Engagement. It used to be called The Three Signs of a Miserable Job. We'll send that out to people. But I think that there's a little nuance there. It's not just the worst job in terms of like what you are doing, but tell us why it was so bad. And I think some of the things that we're going to cover in this podcast that we're going to tease out about how jobs become miserable, I think people are going to realize it was bad, not because I was shoveling hay or whatever it might be, but because of these other things.
Yeah. But we'd love to hear great stories about like some nasty job you
That's
had
right.
to. And in fact, we're going to, it's after Labor Day. We're going to have some fun talking about, Cody, the worst jobs we've ever had. The first was probably the worst in the sense of what I did. I remember I was 12 years old.
I love this story.
And I went to the barbershop, which was at the car wash, which tells you something about the kind of haircuts I probably got. So we go get the car wash and get my haircut. And the guy at the barbershop said, "Hey kid, you want to make $20 this weekend?" And that was sounded like a lot of money to me. It was probably the early 80s or late 70s. And I said, "Sure." And he said, "Okay, have your dad drive you and a group of friends out to this area," which was not the desert. It was the oil fields down below the bluffs in Bakersfield, California. Right. It was like 112 degrees. And they threw us into foxholes, essentially looked like foxholes with big mounds of dirt. And they would say, "Go." And we'd scramble out and we'd push up these targets, metal targets of pigs and other animals. And then they'd go, 10 seconds. And we'd scramble and dive into the foxhole and they'd go, "Fire." And bullets would be flying over our head. We were setting up targets at a shooting gallery out in the middle of the oil fields.
Yeah.
And that's the day I decided I wanted to go to college.
I love that story. And because it's, I mean, to think of that happening today actually seems kind of crazy. I'm from Utah. We, you know, grew up hunting and stuff. To have kids in a field that you're firing at just sounds comical. Yeah.
The next year I got a job at a restaurant, but I would work behind the bar till 1 a.m. I was 13. Hmm. 13. That's like, first of all, I don't think you can even go into a bar, but I would be behind the bar running beer up to the bartender. And I was 13 years old. My dad would come pick me up at 1 a.m, God bless him. And so we had some pretty crazy, crazy jobs.
That's awesome. They're not just bad because you were young, but they're bad for a lot of different reasons. Yeah. We were sharing our least favorite jobs. There's a couple in my life that made the list, but one of them was in college once I actually did a summer job right here in Stockton, like pretty close to where we are now, working at a cherry factory. And I worked in the...
And by the way, in Stockton in the summer, it's in the hundreds.
Well, luckily, I worked in the freezer of the cherry factory. So after all the cherries were picked and put on a conveyor belt and sorted out, they get shipped in these boxes back through this little hole in the wall where it was 32 degrees constantly. And I had to wear a whole parka suit. And so I worked, you know, 12 hours a day in a parka in the back of this cherry factory with people loading these onto pallets and shipping them into these cold storage containers. And that wasn't the worst part about the job, actually. It wasn't the fact that it was 32 degrees, that I never saw sunlight, any of that. It was, we would get 15-minute breaks every 2 hours or whatever it was. And we had these little name tags that this is how you checked in and out of work. And they would blow a horn at the 15-minute mark. And if you weren't back at your station, one of the people who managed this area would ride around on this little bike and pull off your name tag, which essentially just meant
you can
never check in again. You're fired. You know, no explanation. You just couldn't clock in again. There's a whole lot of things that coalesced around this job that made it miserable. And we're going to tease some of those out in this podcast, but it is pretty amazing how many bad jobs there are out there. And it's not just, you know, you tell the story about dirty jobs and
the
whole
TV
concept
show.
Of the
micro.
Dirty
I love
jobs.
Micro.
Right. Tell your observation of some of those people.
Well, what I love about dirty jobs is that, I like watching it with my kids. They like it. I think because half the episodes have to do with poop.
Right.
But I like it because there's people that have what we would think would be horrible jobs and they're actually happy.
Right.
You know, they're like, I remember the one where the guy is taking alligators, like middle-aged, not fully grown, but growing alligators. And he has to figure out whether it's a boy or a girl. Evidently, it's not that obvious. And so he has to put his finger up their bottom and feel around for what part they have while they're snapping at his hands, like one of his fingers is cut off. And he's like, "No, I like my job. People here are great." And I thought, man, that is fantastic.
Well, and so this gets to the point that we teased out at the beginning, which is if we were designing the world's most miserable job, the worst job in the world, it has very little to do with the actual job itself in some cases.
Yes.
Like the alligator determiner. Yes. I don't know what his actual title would be, but it has to do with all these other factors.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me indulge one more though. I have to tell this job I had, and I didn't do it very much, but, and there's a reason for that. But in the summers in Bakersfield, California, it would literally be 110. And my neighbor hired my brother and I to help him with his attic insulation business. Mm. And my brother had it worse. He would actually go up into an attic. It had to be 150 degrees in an attic. And he'd have to spray this insulation. I was in this metal truck. It was probably only 140 where I was. And I'd have to pour this like feathery, dirty kind of stuff into a machine to break it up so he could blow it into the attic. Mm. And then we'd come home, we'd be covered in this stuff, like chickens, sweaty, covered all this. My mom would hose us down in the backyard. But I have to say, you know, my neighbor was a pretty nice guy, and it was pretty good for us to do bad stuff like that.
And honestly, this is part of, it's hard to know what a good job is if you haven't had a miserable one.
Absolutely.
Know? And I think so many people that listen to this podcast know some level of misery. I just don't think that they always attribute it to the right thing.
Right.
Like, what is it about jobs that makes them miserable? And if you were designing the world's worst job, where do you start?
That's right. And you know, I would probably say that the first thing I would do if I were going to design the world's most miserable job is I would probably pay them a lot of money because it means they're going to have to stay in that miserable job.
Right.
And that's what people don't understand. You can be paid a lot of money and it can be so bad that you stay the golden handcuffs. And that's worse because then you don't move on.
Right.
I think about Andre Agassi, the tennis player. He wrote a book that he said he hated playing tennis. He hated it. But he had to keep doing it because he was famous and he made a lot of money. And he was locked into something. You know, Barry Sanders is one of the best football players in the history of the game. And he quit when he was 28. He'd had enough. Mm. And I think that's great because he walked away from fame and money because he didn't enjoy what he was doing. And that's okay.
Right. So paying them a lot of money, that's super counterintuitive. That is a part of a miserable job because if you're not paid well and you hate your job, you need less courage to leave it, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. But the other thing I would do if I were designing a miserable job, Cody, and like, what would be a good job for this? Like a job where nobody knows you. Hmm. My worst job was probably the first job I got out of college as a management consultant. And yet everyone congratulated me. I got the job everybody wanted. It was supposed to be the best place to work, literally, for any college grad. And the biggest thing about it that I hated is after they interviewed me and after they took all this interest in me and recruited me, I went to work and I realized very quickly, and everybody else did, they didn't give a crap about who we were. Mm. They didn't seem to remember our names or anything else about us. It was like, you're on your own.
Right.
And I remember thinking, I remember like I'd been there for like a year and I said to one of the guys working there, I thought you'd like have me babysit your kids and everything. Do we have any interaction? And right. He looked at me like I had two heads. He was like, what? No, just be quiet.
Yeah.
Just do your work.
It's funny you say that. That's probably when I look back at the Cherry Factory job and the guy who pulled off the cards for everyone, it was really the anonymity. It was like, they didn't care. Basically what they were saying is the message they were sending is doesn't matter who you are
or why you might, or
why you might be here or what your circumstances are. We will replace you with someone else. You know, it was like you felt totally unknown and it didn't matter if you were XYZ employee or ABC employee. They're just going to cycle someone else into that role.
That's right. So I'd say we're going to pay you a lot of money. We're not going to get to know you at all. Hmm. We're going to make you feel really anonymous. Right away, that's going to be a horrible job.
Right.
The next thing I would do is I would say, and we are never going to tell you why your job matters. We're going to have you do something where you have no understanding of how it impacts other people's lives.
When you tease this point out, I was thinking about even as a parent, when you tell your kid to do something and they say why, and you're like, because I said so.
Right.
There's so many jobs out there that just say, do it because I said so. Not connecting it to the bigger purpose or the person that it might be affecting or trying to manage them up into realizing that their job matters. It's just, do it because I said so.
Yeah, and it's funny because we think when somebody says why, that they're saying, why should I? What they're doing is, why does this matter?
And why does it matter?
And help me understand why I should be excited.
Right.
And people are like, yeah, it doesn't matter. Just do it. So you can keep your job.
Yeah, that's a surefire way of making someone miserable.
Now here's a pile of money. I don't know. I don't remember what your name is. And we're not going to talk to you at all about who's impacted by what you do.
Yep.
And then the last thing I would do is I would say, and we're not going to tell you if you did a good job. Hmm. At the end of the day, we're just going to say, you can come back tomorrow. We're not going to tell you if you did a good job. We're not going to tell you what your productivity was. We're not going to tell you if you were successful. Just come back tomorrow and we'll keep you for another day.
Yeah, that would be pretty miserable. And then people might stay because you're making a lot of money at that job. But you're totally right in that sense. And there are some jobs, and you talk about this, there are some jobs with built-in measurement, right? That some people know they're doing a good job in sales or waitresses and waiters or anything that has some built-in metric around that. But everyone needs to know if they're doing a good job or not. And it could be anecdotal and verbal from their manager, or it could be, you know, more cut and dry, you know, around numbers, et cetera. But if you go home at night and don't know if you're performing well, why are you even going back to work? What gets you out of bed in the morning? I could see someone who had all those four things you just described, lots of money, wasn't known, doesn't know why their job matters, and doesn't know if they're doing a good job, after Labor Day weekend, pulling back into the parking lot and just with a pit in their stomach.
Oh, man. You know, I was thinking about two other jobs that I really didn't like that weren't the worst jobs I ever had, though. One was I worked at a restaurant for years. I was a busboy. Mm-hmm. Now, being a busboy is not a very glamorous job, obviously. You're dealing with people's dirty food. You're picking up their plates. You're bringing them doggy bags and you're cleaning dishes and stuff like that. And yet, the reason why I couldn't call it my worst job is because, like, I had managers there that were really interested in me. I remember this one guy named Frank Amistoy, I think his name was, if I remember correctly. He was a great guy. He flew like crop dusting planes and he could do, but he was the manager of the restaurant for a while. And he was totally interested in me. He knew who I was. He wanted to know what was going on in my life. And he would really be there. He'd see me doing a good job. He'd tell me so. And at the end of the day, the waitress would give me tips. And even if it was just like $10,
right,
it'd be like, I made 10 extra bucks tonight because I did a good job for them. So even though I was doing really hard work and I went home smelling like garlic and salad dressing, because of the way I was managed and because of the things that were involved in the job, I didn't hate it. Mm-hmm. I was a bank teller in the summers of college. Now, if anybody knows me, that is the worst job in the world for me because it's all about accuracy and detail and all this other stuff. But the people that I worked with, I think I was the only guy there and I was young, and the ladies that I worked with were very interested in me and we had a lot of fun. And as a result, I didn't mind going to work.
Right.
So people tend to think like, are you doing the thing you should do? Now that's important, but even if you're doing the thing you ought to do, if you're not known, if you don't know why it matters and you don't know if you're doing a good job, it's going to be bad.
Well, and I think the context of this conversation is so important. Like one, yeah, it's Labor Day and talking about work in this context is kind of fun and interesting. The other piece is that so many people in the midst of COVID have lost their jobs, or they're on the verge of maybe losing their jobs. I've had more conversations recently with friends who are like, I'm not sure if now that we're remote or my job, I'm not sure it's going to exist longer than, you know, I have friends who work at colleges or universities that are like, I don't know that this is going to continue to be an option for me. And they start to survey the landscape, like, what is it that I really want to do? This is like a demarcation point for people who are looking for jobs to start to say, what is it that I should look for? And it's not money or how much, you know, paid sick leave you have. It's these other factors.
Yeah. And you got to get paid enough and you got to have the right perks and things around the job to let you live. But what you should go in and just go, are you interested in the people that work here? Mm-hmm. And do they know why their job matters? And we went and found a book review on Amazon from my book, the Three Signs of a Miserable Job, then now called the Truth About Employee Engagement. And this is a great review that somebody wrote because it really helps us understand what this is all about.
Totally. So this person says, if there's ever a time you wake up on Monday and dread going to work, then it means that this book is worth a read. Because anyone who is genuinely in love with their job would be willing to go even on weekends. This book explained why I dread going to work. The fact is, the signs are all too clear. After reading the book, I gave it to my manager, and for once, we were both on the same page. He understood my frustration and allowed free reins to allow me to fulfill my goals. Definitely recommend, and don't be afraid to share with your manager. I did, and I'm glad I did.
Managers want to be good managers. You can go and say, you know, I would really love it if you knew more about what was going on in my job and in my life. Mm-hmm. And I would love it if you would remind me why this job matters. And I'd like to know if I'm doing a good job. Most managers will go, yeah, I could do that for you. Your productivity is going to go up. Your job satisfaction is going to go up. You're going to tell other people you like working there. But we don't want to do that because we feel like, oh, a manager is going to feel insulted. And this person just took the book to their manager and said, here's what I need.
This is perfect.
I love it.
And you know, it goes back to what we read at the beginning of every podcast. I think that we need to change the paradigm and what we're expecting from work. Because too many people think, work is corporate punishment, that it's supposed to be drudgery. Like your dad said, they wouldn't call it work if it were fun. There is a future reality out there where managers get this stuff, where companies value this, where people are known. Your story about, I thought you'd asked me to babysit your kids. When I bring my daughter and son in and you're like, can you guys come over to the pool? Come use my right. pool. And it's just like, there are jobs out there and people out there and a future reality out there for everyone to be in a role where they don't get a pit in their stomach when they walk into work on Monday morning or Tuesday morning.
And as we say, all this is free.
It's free.
It doesn't cost a company or a manager anything to do this.
But part of us making this future reality real is people have to denounce the old
yeah.
way, right? Like that's part of what we're doing here is to go, hey, if you're feeling some of these things, then know that it doesn't have to be that way. You know, it was funny. The other day we were researching some stuff online and this guy has this quiz that says, should I quit my job? And it's got a handful of questions on there. And we're like, that quiz should be three questions. Yeah. You know, should be these three questions. Like, am I known? Do I know why my job matters? Do I have a way of knowing if I'm doing a good job? If you answer no, no, no to those, it's time to reconsider and know that there's something out there.
Or make a run at your manager and help them to change.
Exactly.
I can't wait till people start leaving jobs regularly because of this. And so companies are like, of course we have to do this.
Right.
It's just like, it's table stakes in making this a decent place to work.
And until people do exactly what we're saying, like walk away from jobs that don't have it, it was not going to raise the awareness around this that it needs to create a future where people are actually fulfilled and satisfied at work. And it's not based on the compensation or the perks. It's some very basic things for them to develop at their jobs.
Absolutely. So that's what we're promoting today is change somebody else's job as a manager. Change your own job by going to your manager and saying, this is what I need, or finding a job like that. And send us the worst job you've ever had because we're going to read those stories next week.
I know, I can't wait.
That's our tribute to labor on Labor Day. We want to shout out to someone who just went through labor, to Jackie Collins, who had a baby at the table group. We're very excited, yet another baby. And we want to thank everybody for joining us. We will talk to you next week on At the Table with Patrick Lencioni. God bless.